Hello and welcome to another episode of
The Stage Dive.
You're not doing it? You always do it.
Oh, the most underrated tag team finisher in the world ever and the most underrated podcast in the world today.
Yes.
The Stage Dive.
Yes. The Stage Dive. Yes. Hence the name. Hence the name of the podcast, The Stage Dive. All right, so we are fresh off of WrestleMania 42, night one, night two, fresh off of WrestleCon. Yes. So I know you wanted to, I don't know if you want to start talking about night one or if you want me to start with talking about the numbers.
So
as far as attendance and stuff goes.
Oh, let's start off by night one because I think the attendance may have something to do with it. I think night one.
So hold on, hold on. How would the attendance have to do with night one? What do you mean by that?
Just the card setup itself. And what was there, five matches? Which is not usual for a WrestleMania. Well,
no. So see, you're not counting the two ESPN free. Two.
Yes, I'm not counting that.
That's still counted as WrestleMania. That's still counted. It was just the first hour of both days was just aired on ESPN2 and ESPN, but it's still considered WrestleMania. It's still correct. Considered part of the card.
But my thing is what time did that start? Eastern time? Six?
6 o'clock.
Okay. But WrestleMania night one was over by 9:30.
So that's three and a half hours. That's 3.5 hours.
Yeah, but me and you both know we have never seen a WrestleMania 3.5 hours.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Let me ask you this, focusing on that.
Okay.
So AEW pay-per-views last 5 to 6 to 7 hours, from what I've told. I've never watched them, but I've heard it. I've read about it.
Okay.
I think a 3.5 hour show is fine. I know for me, like I'll turn SmackDown on Friday nights, and it starts hitting like 10 o'clock, and I'm like, oh, my God, there's still an hour left? Like, really? Like, I think three hours is too much. I think
that's just because we're old.
Well, maybe. I don't know. But I just think I think 3.5 hours I thought it was fine. I don't know. Maybe because we had too much Tito's and I was ready to leave the party we were at the Palms.
But we'll get into that in a second.
I don't think 3.5 hours was too short, even for WrestleMania, especially being two nights. I mean, when it was only one night back in the day, I honestly don't remember how long it was. But I can't imagine sitting now for 4.5 to 5 hours and watching. Like NXT's 2 hours, perfect. Raw on Monday is like 2.5 hours, which I think is perfect.
Right.
So why do you think it was too short?
I just think for the amount of money for tickets for night one, and the fact that there's so many people that are used to the longer show because of that fact. I think, you know, the 3.5 hour show was really short. Like when I remember watching WrestleMania, I remember it being until 11:30, and then waking up the next day going, oh my God, I can't believe I stayed up for the whole thing.
Yeah.
But you know, it started at 7. So they didn't really do a pre-show back in that time, if you think about it.
Hold on. I'm literally Googling right now how long WrestleMania 41 was. So we have a comparison.
And that was last year. So I think it's going to be a little bit longer.
I know it was last year. That's why I want to know. How long was that one compared to this one?
I just think that from hearing from some of the fans that we heard from on Saturday or Friday, Sunday, they felt a little ripped off because it was so short. I feel that because we watched it from the Palms viewing party, which was awesome. Shout out to Mojo for that hookup. What a fun time that was.
It was.
I think, and from what I heard, I don't know how true it is that, you know, God bless him, you know, rest his soul and everything else, Hogan had more airtime than anybody else.
So I have it right here.
Okay.
It says,
Is this going to boggle my mind?
Yes. It says night one. Hold on. I don't know if that's. It says night one. I don't know if I like this stat. I don't know if it's correct because it's giving me two different stats, which I don't like.
Okay.
Here's a breakdown. All right. So here, total WrestleMania 41 night one breakdown. Total run time was 9 hours. Hold please.
See?
Hold please.
I'm holding.
Pre-show was 3 hours.
Okay.
Post-show was 2 hours. Main show was 4 hours, it says.
Okay.
So you're saying 3.5. So it was a half hour shorter.
That's just, I don't know. Maybe it started late. It couldn't have started later. It was in the same place.
This other thing I was looking at broke down. Night one match time was 1 hour and 25 minutes. Night one non-match time was 2 hours and 29 minutes. So that's three. That's the 4 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
So you're saying this went, all right, let's see, 42. Maybe, let's see the breakdown for 42 here. Hold, please.
Maybe because we were on the Western time or whatever they call that, California
Pacific,
time.
Pacific
time. it just felt so different because, you know, it was over. The sun was still out in Vegas and, you know, we had time to stumble to an Uber. So
this says WrestleMania 42 night one had a total broadcast runtime of approximately 4 hours. Yeah. So it says in ring match time was 1 hour and 22 minutes to 1 hour and 35 minutes. That's all I have that I could find really quick.
So here's what I heard. I don't know how true it is, but let's just throw it out there. I heard TKO produced night one and Hunter and WWE produced night two. I don't know how true it is.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything about that. The only thing I did hear, I guess I'd be comparative, was people were saying, and this was listening to like Bubba and Dave LaGreca on Busted Open and Sam Roberts. They basically were saying it seemed like, and this could be true to what you're saying, that it seemed like night one was TKO and night two was WWE and night two fixed everything. Cause what it says here,
That's how I feel.
Cause I know everyone was complaining about the ads. You know what? I realize you're paying for a streaming service, but at the same time, like you pay for Netflix, but there's still ads. Yeah. Or you pay more money to not have ads. But Monday Night Raw, I pay the extra to not have ads for my Netflix. But during Monday Night Raw, there's still ads.
Yeah.
So it says here, I know people were bitching about the commercials. It says night one ad time was 52 minutes and 25 seconds. Night two at 35 minutes of ads.
See, that's why I'm kind of thinking it might have been, like you were saying, TKO, WWE. The split that I don't know. I don't know why they would do it like that, but it kind of from the outside looking in, it kind of looks like it could hold some weight. It could be true. I don't know either. But I just think, you know, after watching night one and, you know, I thought the Cody match with Randy was really good. I didn't understand parts of it with, you know, what's his name coming down in the neck brace and doing a slow three count for his guy. And then getting RKO.
I didn't understand that either. But I did like the fact that as soon as he did it, that Randy just gave him an RKO.
Basically
get the hell out of the ring.
Wow.
And then the other part for me that was kind of odd, you know, at the end, Randy hits Cody with the belt and then punts him in the face.
Yeah.
And then Randy was nowhere to be found on Monday night, which we'll get to in a second. He was nowhere to be found on Monday night. But the other side of it was the craziest part to me that really makes no sense. First of all, we've already talked about it. It's a dead horse that's been beaten over and over and over again, is that it made no sense to have Pat McAfee in. Nothing against Pat McAfee, yeah. But nothing. From what I've heard, that was supposedly a total TKO call. And correct. There's been quotes out there where TKO has said, well, if we want to throw something in, we have the right to do that because we own it. Yeah. And that's what they did. But right after that, I think it was Sunday or Monday, they show Pat McAfee's like posted on social media.
Yeah, taking
sitting on a couch, basically saying, hey, I love wrestling. I love the WWE. But okay, well, 2 days ago you were saying, or a week ago, you were saying it was a fucking mess and you were there to fix it. So did you fix it by getting RKO'd?
Right. Right. Well, for us as fans, you did.
Right. You fixed it by leaving.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But there was also a video that he pulled out that it had to be Sunday or Monday too, where he took off the neck brace and said that he was clear and he was doing all kinds of movement and everything else. Like, you know, I get it. It's a work and things like that, but that's how the Pat McAfee story ends.
Yeah. I mean, again, we're beating a dead horse here, but Pat McAfee's story never needed to be involved in the first place.
I don't think so either.
There was so much history between, they could have done it so many different ways. But they didn't. And, you know, thank God they're moving on from it and he's not going to be around anymore. So that's the good positive part there.
And as fans now, we just move on and, you know, Monday started the road to WrestleMania for 43. Right. So, you know, we didn't see night two, but I saw clips and stuff like that just because we were flying back
home. Hold on. You're getting ahead of me here.
Oh, sorry.
So, you know, we talked the big thing leading into it was attendance, which was supposed to be the point of bringing Pat McAfee in. So
correct.
I have stats here comparing 41 and 42.
Okay.
Yes.
Statman.
Now there's no, when I looked this morning, there was no exact dollar figure released for the total gate.
Okay.
But the attendance is here.
So, that would be interesting to see.
Here's the thing. So let me start here. WrestleMania 41 attendance was 124,693.
Okay.
WrestleMania 42 was, say, 106,000. So it was a difference of 18,000 people between 41 and 42. Now, the gate for WrestleMania 41 was a record at the time. They said it was $66 million gate.
Okay.
Now, for WrestleMania 42, WWE said it was one of the highest grossing events in company history. So, with that being said, one of the highest, if 66 million was the record, that's telling me they fell just short of that. Because
yeah, me too.
If it was higher, they'd say it was the highest, not one of the highest.
Right. Right. So, and I think it was one of the highest because is this the first WrestleMania TKO has been involved? No, it's like their third, right?
That I don't know.
I think it's either the second or third one that they've been involved in, but I think they're more involved now than they were previously.
Well, I think they're more involved now because the more prominent anyway with bringing in Pat McAfee. I think that brought it out, which could lead to down the road a WWE versus TKO. You know, TKO, I mean, hell, for all we know at this point, we could all be totally getting worked right now, which would be freaking amazing. Yes. And it could be a feud in the making of WWE versus TKO guys.
Yeah, I mean, it
supposedly,
could be.
Supposedly The Rock's supposed to be on SmackDown on Friday.
And he's a TKO guy.
He's a TKO guy. He's on the board.
He's on the board, yeah.
So, yep. I mean, there could be a whole work here with Triple H versus The Rock, putting a team together to go into SummerSlam or leading up to a Survivor Series War Games match or something.
That would be awesome. That would be really cool to see.
Then everyone's being worked.
It would be like the old Monday Night Wars between WCW and WWE. Yeah, right. that would be crazy.
Or even back when we went back in 2016 – when we went back in 2016, remember we did the whole trying to get into the Survivor Series, but then it was Raw versus SmackDown.
Yeah,
I mean, you need a villain. And unfortunately, right now, if you look at all the top baby faces or all the top guys with the belts and the top, they're all baby faces.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before. There's no, like, Oba came in. Like, Oba's a monster, but he's not a heel. There's no, like, monster heel. TKO could turn into the monster heel, trying to say they're running things and, you know, Triple H saying no. And, I mean, who knows? But that would be pretty cool. And if we're all getting worked, that's amazing. We're all getting worked.
that would be crazy. That would be a hell of an idea. Here goes another one of your ideas going into somebody else. Back in the day, all your ideas used to go to somebody else.
Maybe, unless it's already in the works. So if it's already in the works, but if it's not, then you can just footnote credit.
So let's back up a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about WrestleCon and how, what a great event that was that, you know, High Spots puts on every single year for, you know, the fans and for us as, you know, workers and stuff like that. Just an incredible event. It was, I felt like the attendance for WrestleCon was a little low. Again, we don't know. But there was, what, 9 end rows of talent, you know, in the WrestleCon. And we had the privilege of being right across from a stripper pole.
Yes. Well, I don't know if that was a privilege or not, but
I was setting you up for that. It definitely wasn't.
I don't know how much of a privilege that was, especially, you know, you saw the girls on the stripper pole. There was nothing there to write home about. There was nothing there that would force me to run to the strip club to watch them. And even with Ellsworth trying to promote himself being there.
Yes.
That baffled me too. Like, why was he on a pole at the club? Like, I don't know what he was doing there. But
now,
could you see Ellsworth like in the champagne room there?
No, I did not. No,
I don't want to. But, I couldn't imagine.
But to set this up for people, it was a table. And then behind the table, they had one of the big giant platforms that had the stripper pole on it. And the girls were going up and doing spins and stuff like that. So day one, it was, ha, 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 that's funny, that's great, whatever. Let's see how many times the girls actually fall off, which happened quite a few times. It was very entertaining for us. But then as the week progressed, and by day three, it was just like, come on. You know, you brought the D squad. You should have brought the A squad. This is terrible, terrible marketing for your company.
So I want to close the stripper story thing here because I really don't want to talk about them.
Okay, good. I didn't know how to get out of it.
Very, very easily. You just stop talking. the highlight for me with the strippers was on day two. So as Glenn just said, you know, so when you go to WrestleCon, like everyone has a table, there's a sign behind you with your name on it. So right next to the strippers on one side was James Ellsworth. On the other side was Butterbean.
Butterbean, yes.
The highlight for me was the next day. So we did WrestleCon on Thursday afternoon, and we did Thursday night, and then it was Friday morning. So the strippers were there Friday night. And then Saturday morning it started, and we're there setting up the table. We see Butterbean walk over to the table right next to him, which was the stripper's table. They weren't there yet. He grabs one of their T-shirts, wraps it around the pole, and it picks the pole up and moves it away from his table and closer to Ellsworth. Yes. But the highlight was not only him moving the pole, but using their shirt to do it because he didn't want to touch the pole. That's how nasty it was.
Yes. That was hilarious.
And then Sunday,
they weren't there at all. They moved to a different place. Butterbean got them moved and stuff like that.
You see how you keep talking about it?
Yeah, it's... Well, Sunday,
you want to stop talking about it, but you keep talking.
All right.
Are you done with night one, or you have more?
No. That if we're going to talk about night one, Cody, and you know what? How did you feel about that match? Take Pat McAfee out of it and look at the work that Randy did and Cody did. Me personally, I think it was a great match, a good match, a solid match. I think that the bloodshed was probably needed in their little feud and stuff like that.
Well, the bloodshed was like got busted open.
Yeah.
But I mean, they literally beat the hell out of one another.
Yeah, and you could tell. You could see.
Yeah. They you know, everyone steps up their game for WrestleMania, and when you have feuds like that, even if they're friends, it steps up, and you know, you're more into it. So you get more intense. Not that we were ever in big angles like that to get to that level. But you know, you just know from history of watching, you know, especially when you get like Triple H and Shawn and Taker and all them, and Brett and Shawn and Brett and Steve at WrestleMania 13, like that, you just step up to a different level. And you know, those things, the potatoes happen. Potatoes are getting thrown all over, and they happen. I thought night one was fine. I know it got bashed a lot, but I mean, you know, if you watch Seth Rollins match and Gunther, I mean, that was a home run also. That was another great match.
I thought that was phenomenal. I thought that could have been like one or two of the night best match.
Yeah.
I think it's
like Cody and Randy and Gunther and Seth Rollins. It's like 1A, 1B on which one was best.
Yep. And I just think when you wrestle somebody that you're so close to like that, you can vouch for this. You go in a little bit harder. You go in, you know, both guys understand, hey, we're buddies outside the ring and stuff like that. It held true with us and the Godwins. You know, we laid those strap matches in a little bit tighter and stuff like that. The punches in a little bit better. But we all knew that going into it. It wasn't anything like, oh, I'm going to stiff you or anything else like that. It was more like, hey, we're buddies. We're going to go in there and have fun. It's a weird dynamic, I want to say, that you're stiffer with your friends than you are your enemies or the people that you don't really get along with.
And then also when you're going into matches that are big feuds, blow-off matches, you know, again, it ties back to realism. You want to make it as real as possible. You can't stand out there on a microphone for a month every week calling each other names and doing this and doing different things like that and trying to beat each other up and then go in and you're throwing punches and missing by 6 inches. You got to lay shit in. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. I enjoyed those two matches. Liv was on night one.
Yeah.
I don't think that it was time for her to win the belt. I would have liked to see it go a little bit longer because, you know, Stephanie was really coming into her own. Long she had the belt for. I think they could have done this till SummerSlam to have a marquee match.
I think with Stephanie and Liv, and this could just be me. And listen, I know Stephanie. I've talked to her. I know her. When she first came in, she had no English at all. So her English has come a long, long way. When I first met her, when she came in at NXT, she literally didn't speak English. And they, you know, so they had interpreter for her or whatever. But she's come a long way. I know she works on it every day. So I think maybe the language barrier has been a disconnect. With the fans, maybe the fans weren't buying it with her having the belt, even though I think leading into WrestleMania, I think they heated up that feud with what they did, especially with the accidental head bump with her
and
Roxanne. And there were still remnants of that on her forehead at WrestleMania.
There sure was. Yeah.
And Monday Night Raw was actually funny because Liv went out there to do her little celebration with everybody. And they were like, I don't know, the crowd started a chant about the bruise on her head. And Liv turned around. It was the greatest line ever. She goes, yes, but I'm still beautiful. Which I kind of got to agree with. But
That is funny.
Yeah. I mean, she just, you know, the match was still decent. I think they had a decent match. I think the finish was the way they did it was good. And, you know, Monday Night Raw, when they were coming back, what I didn't like about it was they sent Stephanie out. And Stephanie, after having a brutal match like that and losing your belt, they sent Stephanie out right at the ramp as Liv was coming up, and they just stopped and had a face-off, and then Liv just held the belt up.
Didn't understand that either.
No, it was like, I don't know, maybe Stephanie should have just came out and, like, speared her right there and took her down on the floor and got into it to keep it going even more. I mean, I realize the face-off is supposed to keep the feud going, but could they have done it better? Maybe.
But are they still going to continue to feud, or is Soruka going to start a feud with Liv? Because she debuted on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, she debuted, but I think that was for a different reason. But and which we can talk about in a second. But I think if they're killing a feud off, they're not sending Stephanie out there. It was like Cody and Randy. You would think at the end of WrestleMania, the way he laid him out with the belt and then the punt, like, okay, Randy's like, I'm not done. But then Randy was nowhere to be found on Raw. Stephanie was there confronting Liv. So that tells me, yes, that story is going to go, and who knows what's going to happen. I mean, Punk and Cody, because they've had such a long history, or not Punk, Cody and Randy have had such a long history. Maybe that still continues later on, but it doesn't have to continue right now because they have such history.
But
go ahead.
When Punk did his, you know, in-ring promo, Cody came out.
Yeah, so hold on. We're not there yet. Okay. Stay. You brought up Sol Ruka and Liv, so let's stay there for a second.
Okay.
So I think the Sol thing, first of all, I had this written down. The NXT call-ups.
Yeah.
I popped. When I saw Javon Evans, you know, complaining about, you know, needing to have another shot at the Intercontinental title, and then Ethan Page came out, I literally popped on the couch. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I love Ethan. Ethan's amazing. He's an amazing talent. Ethan is a, because I know you don't watch NXT, Ethan's like The Miz. The Miz, no matter what he does, he just tries to get heat. You know, he'll get you to cheer for him, but then he'll turn around and tell you to shut the fuck up and get you booing him within seconds.
Yeah.
Ethan Page is the same way. Ethan Page will push, get all the way up to the line to make you want to cheer for him, and then he turns around and gives you the finger.
It reminded me, like, his aura reminded me a lot of Rick Martel when he did the model. Like, he was, you know, couldn't really have anything to do, because you can see it when somebody came in and they started beating down. Oh, it was Rusev. Started beating down Evans and stuff like that. He just went like this. And he was like, you can have him. I'm done with him. Right. It reminded me, when I saw that, I went, oh, that looks like Rick Martel.
But he's such a great talent. Like, in the ring, his mic skills are awesome. His timing, his timing is dead on. It's going to be great. But I popped when I saw him. And then when Liv went out, and then Sol Ruka's music came on, I was like, oh shit. Like, I knew it was time for certain people on NXT to move up, which I'm excited to see SmackDown, to see who comes out on SmackDown, who debuts on SmackDown. Yeah. I think there's a couple of other people who are moving up. Like, I think JC Jane is. I think she is. There's a couple other people that maybe. But anyway, when Sol came out, I thought the cool part was, she had this great face-to-face with Liv. Then they had a good match.
Yeah, solid.
And then that led into Zarya coming out and laying out Sol Ruka. So I know you don't know the story, but
Amber.
I know. She's over there scratching the floor, like making a bed for herself on the carpet. Zarya and Sol Ruka, the gimmick was they were like best friends. They were tagging together. Like, they always had each other's backs. But then Sol Ruka kept getting all these different opportunities that Zarya was not getting.
They had the last man standing match, right?
Yes. You want to continue telling the story since you just cut me off?
I just wanted to make sure that I knew the person you were talking
about. That's where I was getting to. Yeah. That's what I was getting to, was the story behind them. You know, they were best friends, and then Zarya got jealous. And then kind of turned on Sol. But the crazy part about it, the NXT crowd, is a lot of the crowd, like, back, because there was one instance, there was a ladder match. They were both in a ladder match, and they were both at the top of the ladder, and basically Sol pushed Zari off and won the belt.
Right.
That kind of started the whole, like, jealousy thing. Then, you know, then they're okay, they're friends, but then they're not. Now Sol Ruka is getting a shot at the NXT women's title, and Zarya is out there with her. And then before the bell, Zarya spears Sol Ruka down, picks her up. She uses the F5 finisher also. Boom, hits her with it. They get Sol Ruka up to her feet, ring the bell. JC Jane turns around, hits her with her gimmick punch, boom, pins her in like 10 seconds, match is over. That's Sol's title shot. So it led to all that. And then, yes, on this past Tuesday, they had a last woman standing match. But I thought it was cool how, my point of all this is, I thought it was cool how Sol came out, confronted Liv, had a good match with her.
Yeah.
And the only reason she lost was because Zarya came out and did what she nailed her and then gave her the spine buster, rolled her back in, and then Liv hit her with her finish 1-2-3 and pinned her right that way. So, you know, it gives that here's a new talent and she's going to be great.
She's Sol's very bouncy.
Be great up there. She's so athletic. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. So she's going to be good. But, you know, it tells like she didn't lose to Liv. She only lost because of Zarya. Because of the outside interference. And then they go in and the match was brutal. And then I think the finish to the match was crazy.
Yeah.
Did you see the finish to the last woman standing?
With the table?
Yeah.
The tables that she missed the one. And I could have swore.
Knowing you're going up to the main roster. First of all, why are you taking that bump? You could have done
kind of
different.
Bump.
You could have taken a different bump to get the same
100% reaction.
Yeah. But falling from 15 feet is a Nestle plunge into no man's land. And I mean, she literally could have busted her head, concussion, busted her head.
Oh
open.
My God. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm guessing she's fine. I haven't heard anything about being hurt. But to take that chance is to me is just was ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree. I saw that and I watched it over and over again. I went, how did she not knock herself out?
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah,
it was crazy. But yeah, so and, her going up there, that's going to be good.
And my thing is too, even if she would have landed perfectly, how does that still, I mean, the tables were like this. She fell this way. Even if she landed, you know, I still don't understand how that would have came off. I mean,
even if she would have landed directly in the middle of them, there's a chance to get hurt somehow with something.
They could have kicked out. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, I mean, it was a crazy bump for her to take. And then the other side of it was, you know, I realize it's the blow off match. I realize you want to go off big. I realize you're putting Zarya over big and the hug they had and her saying, I'm sorry. And you think they're going to kiss and make up.
Yeah.
And
then
Zarya just pushing her off. Put Zarya's character over more. So, you know, Sol going out did the right thing, just like Joe Hendry going out on NXT tonight, because Joe Hendry's supposed to be on Raw next week.
Yeah, I saw him that.
Putting Keanu Carver over the way he did. I mean, Keanu Carver just beat the shit out of him, and basically the ref stopped the match.
Oh, wow.
And they left Joe Hendry laying, but it made Keanu Carver a beast.
He's a monster.
Yeah. He's going to be an Oba now because, I mean, he's big like that, and he's got that big personality. He's just got to work on a couple of things, but, you know, he's going to be another great one. But anyway, she went out putting Zarya over huge. She's moving on to Raw. Now Zarya is a monster, you know, for the girls. So, but still, just, I don't know, like, save that bump for a pay-per-view, a PLE, you know, one of the bigger shows. You just didn't. There was a way to do it, in my opinion, without doing it the way she did.
I agree. Yeah, it was very, very dangerous, very risky. So,
yeah.
But thank God she's okay. You know,
as far as I know,
I'm excited to see how she evolves on Monday Night Raw and the following that she gets and stuff like that. I think she's going to do phenomenal. You know, Monday Night was the first time I actually saw her in ring, and I was taken back. I was like, wow, she's very, very bouncy. Her in-ring skills reminded me a lot of Evans.
Yeah.
It's crazy. These kids today. Damn kids today.
It was funny. I was listening to Natty yesterday. On Thursday, she does the heartbeat on Pro Wrestling Nation 24/7. And she was talking about that. I think it was with Bubba. They were talking about Sol Ruka. And Natty's funny because Natty's like, you know, she goes, you know, I did the no holds barred thing. She goes, you know, and, you know, you're in there fighting. She goes, I would love to get in the ring with Sol Ruka. She said, and a couple of the other girls, she goes, just to beat them up. She goes, legit. She goes, because she goes, that's part of it. Like, what's your grit? What's your grind? What have you done to get there? And a lot of these people coming into NXT, they haven't gone through that side of it like you and I went through, like going through the training at the school, just getting beat up and trying to, you know, figure it out and grow from there and get toughened up. She said, and then there was another girl that's going through LFG, Zena Sterling, and this is what Bubba said to her. She's been on three seasons at LFG. Bubba said about her, he goes, that's the thing about Zena Sterling. Like, she's got this such a nice personality, but there's got to be something that turns that makes you a killer, that makes you a beast. Yeah. And Natty said, yeah. Natty goes, I want to get in the ring with those girls and beat that out of them. Literally, she goes, I want to beat that out of them. She goes, because that's what they're going to need up here. She goes, they're going to need that killer instinct.
Yeah.
To survive up here.
And I if Natalie say that to me, I'm calling out sick that day. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see, with that being said, I can see them getting Saul over to the dungeon over in Tampa and working out with Natty to find that grit. But no, Saul's going to be, she's going to be awesome because, again, she can talk.
Yeah.
Athleticism is ridiculous. And it's going to be, especially for me, you know, working with them, because all of these people moving up, I've worked with them in some shape or form. You know, I'm not there all the time, every day, like the other coaches, but, you know, I feel, I don't know, I guess attached, if that's the word, or.
Yeah, no. Yeah. It's like, you can say attached.
Yeah. That's like, that's why I get excited when I see him. Like when I saw Ethan, I was like, cause I don't know, you know, I watch it from a fan perspective, like LFG, like when I go over there and the kids are like, oh, we did this on, I'm like, I don't want to know the results. Like I want to watch it unfold on TV. Because it'll be like, oh, I want you to see the match. I'm like, I don't want to see the match. I'm going to watch it on LFG.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah. So when I come up, like, I pop for it. I get excited for them. And, like, I send Ethan Page a message on Instagram about it. And he actually replied back, which I thought was pretty cool. But, yeah, I'm excited for all of them. And I'm excited. And I'm excited to hear Joe Hendry's concert next week.
Me too. Actually, me too. Yes.
Even though you don't get him, once you see him more, you'll get him.
Yeah.
You'll get him.
I believe that.
Yeah. All right. So switching gears back to Mania.
Okay.
Oba and his match with Brock. If you take entrances out, I think the match was less than 5 minutes. But I think that's all it needed.
Yeah, me too.
I watched it. I actually watched it when we got home late Sunday night. I was like, I wanted to watch that, and I watched it, and I thought it was perfect.
You know, I thought Brock, it was a very
Brock
good
him, Brock him with a couple of very stiff clotheslines, and Oba didn't sell him.
Yeah,
he bounced right back, and then you know Brock got his offense back. Brock hits him with the you know his F5. He hits him with something else. Hits him with an F5, and it's not like Oba got right up. He big man sold the way a big man should sell, getting up, slowly getting up to two knees, up to one knee. Yep. And he worked it perfectly. I thought it was perfect.
It was way better than I thought it was going to be. Because remember, I was skeptical about that match. And that threw everything out the door. It was very, very good. I liked, because you could almost see the progression of the match with the changing of the guard, you can say. You know, Brock, you know, giving the roses to Oba. So, yeah, it was something.
I thought it was perfect. And then Oba's leaving the ring. And, you know, he's walking up, and people were complaining about the long entrances. Well, it was a 75-yard ramp. Of course, it's going to be long entrances. And I'll hit on this real quick. Trick Williams, who won the U.S. title, congratulations. Did you see his train coming out?
I did. That was crazy.
I thought that was
crazy.
Awesome.
Yes.
So Oba's walking back up the ramp, and they're still showing Brock in the ring, but he was just laying dead.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, like I realized putting it over. But like now Oba's gone and he's still laying there. And then he does the slow sit up and he was just sitting there. And then when he slowly starts taking off his gloves, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah. Yeah. And then the tears, the emotion coming out. And, and from what I understand, he just did that on the spot.
See, me too.
From what I've heard, he kind of did that on the spot. And it was one of those things where, and I think it was a quote, may have been by Triple H, where Triple H spoke to him afterwards. Because according to Triple H, he came through the curtain and just kept right on going through Gorilla. Like, he didn't stop. He supposedly went right out to his van or his bus or wherever he changes. And he went right there. And then, like, you're doing it. Like, I popped him. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, what an oh, shit. I mean, Brock's had lots of WrestleMania moments. He's had, you know, tons. SummerSlam moments. He's had, you know, a ridiculously crazy, awesome career. But then if when he's leaving, like him and Paul are hugging and like he's crying and, you know, Paul's, you can see clearly that Heyman was talking to him. But it was almost funny watching them walk up the ramp together because it was like a father and son. Like, for me, if Tyler messed up and I can't wait to get him home and I'm just trying to push him more to get him into the door, so as soon as we get in the door, I could light into him. That's what it looked like to me with Heyman, with Brock. Like, get the fuck in the back so we can talk about what just happened.
What are you doing? You didn't tell me anything. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I actually heard, because remember when Brock went through the intestine issue that he had? Like, his intestine walls are from, I don't know if it was an old interview or a new interview or what, but I heard him say that his intestinal walls are so thin now that the doctor said one more bump, one more this, or one more hard hit, it would totally kill him.
Right.
So I think it was a more on the spot, him thinking of longevity of, you know, the wife, the kids, you know, his future and stuff like that. So, you know, you can't say anything negative about it because he's looking, you know, out for himself and stuff like that. Yeah. It was a
fucking amazing moment. And I think one of the things, so, you know, now they're talking about, the talk now is Paul Heyman owes Gunther a favor.
Yeah.
And the storyline that's being thrown out there now, because SummerSlam's in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is where Brock is from. And SummerSlam was like his coming out party when he beat The Rock for the title when he first started. But that's kind of the rumor now, is that Gunther convinces Paul to get Brock to come out of retirement to have this one last match, so then Gunther can retire him. I hope it doesn't happen. I don't think Gunther needs to retire everybody when they're ready to retire now. I mean, Randy Orton was a legend killer, but he's not killing legends anymore.
Right.
I think the way Brock went out, I think they just need to leave him alone.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yeah. It's Brock's way. And I think that's what made it so much more special, that he did it his way. He's always done things his way, which, to his credit, is that it couldn't have been any better. Yeah,
no,
I hope it's just done. Yeah.
And if you look back, and again, I'm going to mention this later with the Roman stuff. When Brock was like doing his thing, I didn't watch much. So it was just clips of things I saw here and there of him. So I know Brock, but I don't really know Brock, if that makes sense. Like the TV side of him. But from what I understand, like, Brock never slapped the fans' hands walking up the ramp or coming down. Like, he was doing that on the way back and,
you know,
kind of like was stopping and like soaking in from it. Like, that wasn't Brock's character. When Brock did that after WrestleMania, that was Brock being Brock. Like, a real Brock.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So, listen, the man's had an incredible career. Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer, and that's going to be a big, giant thing when they put him in the Hall of Fame next year. But, yeah, I just don't want him to come back. I want him to go away the way he went away, on his own, doing it.
100%.
And if it was spur of the moment, that makes it even better to me.
That's so much better. Yeah. Agree.
I hope in Unreal, when the next season of Unreal comes out, they show Triple H and Bruce in the back going, what the fuck is he doing? What's going on? Well, Brock, put your gloves back on, Brock. What are you doing? Don't take your boots. No, stop. Put your boots back on.
That's
what I want to see.
Yeah, me too. That's funny.
All right, cool. Yeah, so I thought that was awesome. And I don't want to see Brock come out and have to face Gunther.
Me either.
I think at that point, it's not, I don't know. I mean, anything can happen. It's wrestling. I just hope that does not happen. That's all.
Me too. Agree.
All right. So switching gears to Monday Night Raw.
Okay. I got, there we go. Ah.
Are you okay? Are you shitting your pants?
No. My knees were all like this. Okay. Oh.
So sticking with Oba.
Okay.
On Monday Night Raw, Oba opens Raw, and which yes. I didn't expect at all. I expected it to be Roman or Punk to open Raw, but for Oba to come out and open Raw, his music hits. First of all, one of my favorite things about even WrestleMania was everyone in the crowd doing his walk.
Oh, and yes.
You know what I'm waiting for?
What?
Here's what's going to happen. Someone's going to score a touchdown in the NFL, and they're going to be walking around going like this. They're going to be doing like I got goosebumps right now doing it.
Funny.
That's going to be a celebration. I was doing the Oba. The Oba.
Yeah.
That's the new thing, the Oba. So Oba comes down, gets the microphone. He's all dressed in his suit, which I thought made it look even better.
I didn't like that part.
You didn't like the different suit?
Yeah, I didn't like the suit.
Why?
I don't know. He looked too corporate, too done. Like when I see him in his character and his gear and stuff like that, I'm like, that's a bad motherfucker right there. But when I saw him in his suit, it normalized him to me.
I don't know if it normalized him to me. To me, it just made him look like I'm buttoned up. I know who I am because he dresses like that. It's not like, again, I've seen him outside, like he dresses like that. So I don't know. For me, it didn't so much normalize. To me, it was more like I know who I am. I'm buttoned up.
Yeah. I can see that. I can see that too.
Especially when he came down to the ring and like, he didn't mention Brock. He didn't mention anything. And it was funny because if you saw the post WrestleMania Night 2 press conferences, he made a comment about, by the end of the year, Roman, I'm coming for you. And then if you saw Roman's interview, they were chanting, Oba's gonna kill you. Oba's gonna kill you was the chant for Roman. And Roman went right with it. And Roman was like, all right, I'm right here, Oba. Like, whenever you want to go, like, let's go.
Yeah.
So when he came out and it was four words, your ruler has arrived.
And dropped the mic. Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I thought the promo itself was good. I don't know. I just wish I would have saw him in different attire.
But if you look at it where if he comes down in full gimmick, but he's not working.
Right.
He's not having a match. Like every other time he's come down in the ring, there's been an altercation. He's ready for war. This was a, look at me. I'm buttoned up. I know who I am. I'm reminding you of who I am. And I don't have to say anything other than these four words. Your ruler has arrived. And I think between that and the match he had, like, he's arrived. He's the new badass. And I think if you look back at the beginning of Brock's career, it's almost kind of the same. And if they can build him that way, he becomes that super attraction who doesn't need to be there every week. But when he's there every week, you know shit's going to go down.
Right. Exactly. I think the same thing. You know, when I see him, I see Brock. You know, especially when Brock first started, the athleticism, just everything about both of them are so similar. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you go like he's the new big man, because you go like if you go, you know, you had Andre, you had Hogan, and you had Undertaker, then you had Brock pass it on. Undertaker passed on to Brock by losing at WrestleMania, and now Brock passing on to Oba. I just think it's gonna be awesome. And again, I guess because I've worked with him at the PC, I'm excited to see where it goes.
I'm excited to see where it goes too, because I mean, how do they book anybody against him?
Yeah.
I'm excited to see where it goes too. Yep.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
And what's even going to be better is when he turns heel and he gets, you know, Heyman or somebody on his side or somebody like that. It's going to happen. It always does. So do you think he needs a mouthpiece?
I don't think so.
You think his promos are good enough to stand on their own?
I think so. I mean, he stood his own against Brock the last week before the pay-per-view.
Oh, the week, yeah. The
yeah.
week before, yep.
Yeah, I mean, his promos are good, and they're just going to get – he's young, so it's just going to get better and better. You know, and I'm sure he's going to work with Heyman, you know, because Heyman's probably taking him under his wing in the back, and Paul's going to work with him, and you know how that's going to go. It's going to be fucking amazing because Paul Heyman's amazing. He's great.
Yeah.
All right, so now fast forward to later on Raw. Punk comes out, basically kind of just says it wasn't his night, but thanked the fans for having his back and helping him through the grieving he had been going through with all the people and Larry, his dog, that had passed away, and that he didn't feel defeated. What he learned was to always be ready. As soon as he said, "I've learned to always be ready," I was like, "Where's Cardona?" Like,
you're poor man.
Cardona's lying here.
I love Punk's promo. I loved it. I thought it was good. I thought it was very honest. I thought it was from the heart, you know, from him. You know, because everybody knows that, you know, he's lost a lot of people in the last 6 months, with Larry, his dog, being, you know, top of that list. I thought it was very, very good. I thought it made him more, I don't want to say human.
It makes him more likable.
Yes, it does. It shows real life emotion.
He's connecting. So here's the part with like Punk and Cody, which I'll get into in a second. And then you got like Randy Orton. They were brought up on more of the realism side. So yes. Punk knows if he keeps just getting real with everybody and being honest and as honest as he can be storyline wise, you're going to get that emotion out of the people. The two most important things in wrestling is telling a good story and drawing emotion out of the people. And that's what he's going to do. And that's what he did Monday night.
Yeah, 100%.
The only thing I didn't like about it was he was kind of like, so I lost. Like, no big deal. Like, I did what I wanted to do. You know, I main evented WrestleMania. I main evented this night two of WrestleMania. I had this great match. And I lost. It just wasn't my night. Like, oh, well, like, big deal. And then when Cody came out and he was still kind of like, oh, I'm sorry, Cody. Did I steal your time? Like, was this your time? I wasn't supposed to be great. Here. Yeah. It was almost like locker room banter that you would do in the locker room.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Cody comes out. He looks awful. He took those glasses off. I saw his eye.
Oh, my God.
It was like the black around it. It almost looked like something like it was burnt skin.
Hats off for him to show up. You know, because it was probably one of those things where they were like, nah, you don't have to do anything. And so he's like, no, I need to.
Well, he probably cleared concussion protocol. And they were like, can you at least cut a promo to get this going? That's probably what they had pre-planned. And Cody being Cody and being a professional is going to be like, yeah, I'm going to do whatever I need to do.
Right.
But then, you know, Punk told him he's not a loser because he's still champ. But he was a loser because he lost. That whole thing I thought was kind of funny. But, you know, the thing with Punk was he kept saying, you know, I've learned I always have to be ready because you never know when a challenge is going to fall from the sky. And I loved when he said it with Cody in the ring and he like leans into Cody. And as he leans in to like make his point, he's looking down at Cody's belt the entire time. And the cool part with that is when he leaves, and Cody's response was, just say when.
Yeah.
And Punk doesn't really turn around, but he faces the camera, and you see the smirk on his face, almost
the
like,
smirk.
I suckered him right in.
I got him now, Yeah,
I suckered him right in. And there's two things with this. Like, that storyline could happen next year. It could happen 6 months from now. It could happen whenever. But the one thing I didn't like about it with Punk was he never mentioned wanting a rematch for his title. You know, technically in wrestling, if you lose your belt, you're automatically gifted a, you're supposed to be, at rematch. Least you were yeah. gifted a rematch. No mention of having that rematch. And then if you think about it here, think about it this way. Him not asking for the rematch and then going after Cody, how does that make you feel about Punk? Does Punk say, hey, I still want to stay relevant. I still want to go for a belt, but I don't think I can beat Roman. I think it would be easier to beat Cody.
I actually think at that particular time, that's probably the line of thinking. Cody's down. He's hurt. He's susceptible to, you know, to getting beat right now. So it could have been. I'm intrigued to see where that goes. Because I saw it and I was just like, damn, that would probably be really good. And then I saw the Roman and Fatu thing and things like that and or Jacob and went, okay, so Punk is done with Roman, which confused me as well. But you know,
but
I jumped on the storyline is what I jumped on, more or less.
And I realize, you know, they're transitioning, but you could go with, because I'm going to talk about that with Roman and Fatu also for in a second. But, you know, Punk could, let's say, fight, because like, the way Fatu went out and challenged Roman, and Roman said, oh, take a week to think about it. Fatu's not going to come back next week and say, oh, I rethought about it, and you're right. No, sir, I don't want to have a match. He's going to say, no, fuck you, I want the match. Yeah. You know, I got to feed my kids. I want to be where you are. The whole thing, the Rolex, the cars, and all that stuff. Punk could come out and get involved with that somehow. Like, there's still ways to intertwine all of them together.
Yes.
And then, you know, you could end up with the Punk challenging Cody. And that match happening. And then all of a sudden, here comes Orton out of nowhere. RKO on Punk. No. F you, this is still my spot. I've still won another shot at the belt. So, I mean,
maybe that's why Randy wasn't there.
Maybe. I'm just saying. I'm just trying to think of all the different storylines and scenarios that could come out of what happened on the way it could go.
Yeah.
So, and then this is, I mentioned this earlier. Like, I didn't, there was a period where I didn't really watch, or I would watch periodically, but I didn't like really pay attention to storylines like I am now, or I have been for a little while. So the Bloodline supposedly was like the last 3 or 4 years of the Bloodline was like one of the greatest eras. It was like the storytelling was great. Everything was so great. But I missed all of that because I really didn't pay attention. So I missed the meat of it, which now I'm kind of upset I didn't, and I'm not going to go back and watch it. So, but what I did like about Roman when he was in the ring talking, especially when Fatu came out, because you know, Jacob's got all that energy and he's just like, you know, in your face, like at any moment, looks like he could explode. I loved Roman's demeanor to just sit back and remain calm, cool, and collected as Fatu basically told him, I don't want to win. I don't need to win the. I don't want to win the title. I need to win the title. And just Roman was kind of just like that. I literally looked at him for the first time with this whole OTC thing and his tribal chief thing. And again, this is because I didn't watch all of it, so I didn't really see his demeanor. And I know he had everyone around him. He had protection. You know, he had Paul talking for him a lot. But the way he just stood there and calm, cool, and collective was just like, listen, I'm the head guy here. This is my show. This is my shit. And
I'm the boss.
Yeah, you might want to rethink this because this may not end well for you. Like, just the way he did it, his whole demeanor, I thought was awesome. I loved it.
So did I. I thought it was cool, too.
And again, I don't know if that's how he was before or if this is kind of a new Roman because, you know, he called the Usos out with them and was like, listen, I'm not asking you to serve me. I'm just asking you, you know, to stand next to me now. Because the last thing you can do is you can't bring back the Bloodline like it was before. It won't make sense. It won't be believable. You can't bring back the Attitude Era. You can't bring out the
Right.
Ruthless Aggression Era. You can't bring those errors back. but you can do different pieces of it. But just the way he, and again, I don't know if he was like that before, but, or if this is new, him like revolving, recreating himself, but just his calm, cool, collective self, I thought was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah, I thought it was too. I thought it was a different side of him that I think people haven't seen. And the nonchalant, like, yeah, take a week, think about it, let me know next week.
Right.
It was good. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was so, and I'm gonna be honest with you, it was the first Monday Night Raw that I've watched from start to finish, and I was like, wow, I can't wait until next week. I haven't done that like you before when the Bloodline and all that stuff was going on, didn't watch it. I'm now finding myself more intrigued with the storylines and where it's going, and you know, Soruka and you know, Javon Evans and all the new people coming up. I'm starting to know because Javon, he came by, you know, WrestleCon. You know, we had a chance to, I had a chance to say hi, you had a chance to talk to him and stuff like that, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. So no, that was cool that he was there. It was cool that a couple of the other NXT kids came through. Yeah, that was the other cool part for me with the WrestleCon was like, you know, WrestleCon for us is always great because we get to see people we haven't seen before. And then, you know, we get to hug Demolition and congratulate them on finally getting into the Hall of Fame. But the other side of it for me was like all the WWE ID kids were there also. So, you know, I'm able to chit chat and talk with them as well. I don't, sticking with Fatu and Roman, I don't think Jacob wins the title at Backlash. I think that Roman now holds the belt for a while. But that brings up another thought I had or question. And they were talking about this on Busted Open. Do you think Jacob Fatu is world championship material? Or he's one of those guys where they're like, hey, you did a good job. Like, we appreciate you. Here, we're giving you a title run, but it's transitional. Do you think he's a guy like a Cody or a Roman who could keep the belt, hold the belt for a while, and it's believable? Or is Jacob more of a, and I'm talking right now, not future, right now.
Yeah.
Just a transitional back to, say, Roman or just to build a storyline?
I would say it would depend on the booking and who they put him against. I could see him being world champ because he's got such a following now. And I don't know if he could shoulder and carry the whole company. But on the other side, I think he could. You know, I'm split 50-50 between, just give him the IC belt or, you know.
No. I'm not talking IC belt. I'm talking world champion.
Right,
Cody or Roman, can he carry either one of those belts other than just being a transitional champion, like Cody or Punk or Roman can?
I would say right now, no.
No, I agree. I say no.
But I love him. I think his stuff in the ring is great.
Oh, his work is great. I'm not questioning that. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't think he's there yet. I think his character needs to grow and develop more. Nobody wants a crazed manic coming in on Jimmy Kimmel or something like that, that personality. You know what I mean? Like Roman did. That was the thing with Punk. Roman went and did that, but Punk didn't. Like, I don't think he's ready for that. His character needs to grow and evolve. But, you know, he's going to work Roman at Backlash. Roman goes over, like, where does he go from there? Is it a continued storyline with him? Does he now get in line and get back again, not to serve Roman, but to be with him? Because, you know, Jacob Fatu came right out and said, listen, I ain't here to serve you. I ain't here to be your bitch. I'm out here because I want your spot, because I need your spot. I need to have that. I need to have the watch. I need to have the car. I need to have the title. I need to have everything you have, because I need to take care of myself and my family now.
Yeah.
So he loses. Where's he go?
I think he needs to get there more marquee matches, meaning with the Punks and the Roman Reigns and the Cody Rhodes. I think he needs.
My question to you is, after Backlash, he loses. Where does he go from there? Where do you see that story going?
I can see it continuing. Maybe what they do is they put a stipulation in the match, win or be back in the bloodline. And I think maybe he loses, goes back in the bloodline, but he's that redheaded stepchild nobody wants to talk to, nobody wants to play with. He's just standing on the side like this and doing that stuff.
He's like a protector.
Yeah, sort of. So I can see that being like a...
So you're throwing him into that Solo, Sequoia role. That's what Solo was.
Kind of, yeah. What happened to him? Where's he at?
Solo's on SmackDown. He's got the MFT.
Oh, that's right.
My family tree. That's what the MFT stands for, my family tree.
Okay.
Yeah. That was supposed to be a spinoff of the Bloodline, too. But
yeah,
hasn't really, from what I understand, I've seen it a few times, hasn't really gotten over all that great. And now I've seen there's been feuding and within also. So we'll see what happens with that. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a fun weekend. It was a fun weekend. It's always great seeing everybody. And, it was just a good time overall. I was glad to get home. The dry heat, the dry air out there, literally my skin was all dried out and I constantly felt dehydrated. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, me too. And God forbid we want to buy a gallon of water. How much was it again?
Yeah, so I got a gallon of water. It was at the hotel. It was at the hotel. Like, I needed water. I wasn't going to go walk around and find a Walgreens or something in Vegas. So I just walked into the hotel store to get a gallon of water, and it was $11.09 for a freaking gallon of water that I can get at my local Walmart for $1.39. But hey,
it would have been cheaper to buy a gallon of gas.
Listen, three words. Three words: supply and demand.
That's it. That's right.
They had it. I needed it. I bought it, and I didn't think twice about it.
Yeah. Crazy. So, the price. Everybody's talking about that now. The price of that in Vegas were just astonishing.
I think the price is in the hotel because you're in the casino. You're held hostage because if you need it, you're going to pay it. It's the old saying. It is what it is. And, if I wanted to take time to go walk the strip to find something and then have to carry it back, I mean, it was there. So supply and demand. Yeah. All right. Cool beans. That's all I got. You got anything else?
Nope. That's it. That's all I got, too. I'm excited to see SmackDown tonight, Friday night, and also excited to see what happens on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun to see.
Yeah.
All right. So remember, do whatever makes your heart happy. Just don't suck at it. Peace out. See you next time.
Later.